chapter 18. Hello, everyone. Okay, so David HaMelech is getting the throne back, and that's the good news. But unfortunately, whenever brothers fight, it's never good news. In fact, some people say that's why we can't have sirloin. That's why Yaakov Avinu was given the mitzvah not to eat the hindquarters of the animal where the sciatic nerve is, to remind us that whenever you get in a fight, even if you win, you walk away limping. Right? That was the whole idea, was that his hindquarter was limping. Because war is not a good thing, even though you have to do it, and sometimes, and you hope that you win, even when you win, there are casualties. That's the tragedy of every war. And this war, to gain back the country for David HaMelech, certainly was a good thing. But unfortunately, David saw in it the tragedy of the loss of his son. David, we're in chapter 19. David blamed himself, which is the Jewish attitude, Jewish guilt. But when we look at events, we always look at events. We look at ourselves. We don't look at other people. I mean, you can always criticize other people if you feel that that'll do something for you. But we always look at how we can improve and what we can learn from things. And we don't really look at, we focus on ourselves. And so David looked at himself and he felt that he was punished this way for his own sins. And had he not done the things that he had done, he would not have lost his two sons. This was the second son that was killed. And so, like, his two oldest sons, both of them are killed. It's a terrible thing. And so he looked inwardly and blamed himself. Now, David did have some blame. First of all, he sinned with Bathsheba. He set a bad example in that way. Also, it says that when Avshalom started to rebel, David didn't speak to him. David didn't say to him, why are you acting this way?
Excuse me, didn't we leave off... before the end of 18?
Yeah, we did.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
When they come running.
You are right. Thank you. Yeah, we'll have to. We're in the end of chapter 18. That's fine. We're with the runners announcing the David. That's fine. Thank you. Yeah, I remember thinking, should we run through it or should we wait? And we were gonna find out what happened when David hears the news. That's right. Okay. But David, I'm already telling you what happens when he hears the news. But again, he tended to blame himself, mm-hmm. and we're saying that he felt as a father, if he had done the right things, perhaps his son would not have turned out the way he did. And so, therefore, when he hears that Avshalom is killed, he feels very bad about it. But before we get there, let's find out what happens, how he hears about it. So. I imagine
we were at 24. We left at 24.
Is that where we're at 24? Okay. Mm-hmm. So let's just go back then a little bit. Verse 19. Okay. So we talked about the monument that Avshalom made. Some people see it as the incredible arrogance of Avshalom. You know, he's making himself monuments. He had the fanciest hairdo in town. He had all these runners going in front of him. It was a certain attitude. And that attitude led him to rebel against his father, which a regular person wouldn't have acted like that. But he was killed. We mentioned last week Rav Chaim Shmulevitz even prayed, and you usually don't pray at a wicked person's grave, but he prayed that, Hashem, you see the love of a parent is such that even when the children don't do exactly what they are supposed to do, the parents still love them. And so he was praying to Hashem that Hashem should still love us, even if our behavior isn't always the way it should be. And it was just such a unique kind of prayer. Nobody ever thought of it that way before he vocalized it like that. But here we're talking about another thing, and that is being the bearer of good news. And this is a Jewish concept that if you hear a mazel tov, share it with everybody. If you can make somebody happy, by all means, you know, that's a good thing. And we should try to bring people good news and tell them things that will make them happy. So Achimatz ben Sadak, he was one of the professional runners. If you remember, he's the one that brought the information for what was happening in Yerushalayim to David, and he was a descendant of the Kohanim. So he said he was excited to tell David about the fact that his enemies were defeated, and David was living in terrible fear, And now this was the opportunity to tell him, Baruch Hashem, the enemies of David were defeated. So Achimetz ben Sehi volunteered, Omer, Arutzana, please let me run, let me tell the king, Kishafet Hashem Miyad. It's all good news. Hashem has judged his enemies. And a person should be happy when their enemies are judged. Yoav says, this isn't such good news. You're not the one to, I don't recommend you bring that news today. Now, he thought this would be a good effort. People remember, where were you when, or who told you the news, right? So he wanted to be remembered that he was the one that told the king that he's getting his throne back. And he said, no, you'll get, you know, there'll be other days. But he didn't think that David would have a good reaction. Ayom azelo tevasu. Today you should have known, Kial ben Melech Meis. Because at the end of the day, the son of the king died. And the day is tinged with a certain tragedy. So then Yoav told the other. Some people say this was the Cushi was the one that had spotted Avshalom, and he said, "Leik Higila, you be the one to go tell the king. Asherisi, tell him what you saw." V'ishtakvu Cushi Yoav, and he bowed down v'yoretz. The Cushi was not a. If you remember, he was offered. Like an extra belt for doing this. He was not a high placed soldier who you'd remember their name. He was a nondescript kind of person. Somebody that would have gotten he would have gotten an extra belt for finding Avshalom or whatever. He was not somebody who was a highly placed person who was well known to the king and who'd be remembered. And so he said, you go tell the king. You're the one who saw him hanging by his hair. You tell him what you saw. Now, I'm not sure if he wanted to know how he died or just that he died. I'm not sure. Now, Achimetz, he couldn't wait. He wanted to tell the king. He was just too excited. So he said, Vima, please let me go, Achri Akushi. He says, I got to tell him. I got to go. I want to announce to the king. I'm very excited. Now, again, he had been there when the king had to leave Yerushalayim and when they were afraid of being attacked. And so he really wanted to. Sometimes when a person shares trouble with somebody, we have a rule: Zorin bedima barina etc. If you plant with tears, you'll reap with joy. And so, when you're with somebody in a difficult time, it's very special to go and celebrate with them because you've gone through thick and thin, so to speak. And so, so he said, "Please let me. I really want to tell the king because I had to bring him the bad news, about all the plans that your son was going to attack you in the field and this and that. Now I want to tell him that your enemies have been defeated." Oh, come on, not such a good idea. It's not such a good idea, but in the end, he said, Achimat said, Yoav said, there's really no need for you to run. And he said, I want to run. So he ran. At the end of the day, you could do what you want to do. Free country, right? So he ran there. He was such a fast runner. He beat the other guy who got the head start. 24. So you have these two runners. One is the famous Achimetz, who's the son of Sadok, who was the well known to David and a righteous person, and the one who had announced that originally that his son had rebelled and was taking an army to try to kill him. And you have this other who's a Cushi, the only thing we know about him is he was the one who first spotted Avshalom hanging by his hair. So 24. Now David, all of this time, was waiting for the news. He was not like, this was not an easy battle for him. He was very anxious to see what would happen. He was there. He picked up his eyes and he sees somebody running. They had a person on the lookout. That was the early intelligence in those days. They had a guy on the tower who was like looking out in the distance, and he said, so the king tells him, if you see only one runner, that's good news. That's a besora. That means he's coming to announce something. If the people were retreating, there'd be dozens of people. And he's coming near. And then the watchman who's up on the high tower, they announced to the king, I see another runner coming. There must be two announcements. 27. the guy on the top, he says, I can tell who the first runner is. He has that, you can identify a person by their walk or how they move. Sometimes when you're real, when you know somebody very well, all you have to do is see their walk and you could pick them out. You know, sometimes you people have a certain way of walking. Like you'll see a group walking and you'll see someone there, you'll notice who that person is. V'yomer ha-melech ish tov zeh. He says, that's a good guy. I'm sure he's got good news. He would only bring me good news. He would, if he's coming, it must be good news. 28. Achimas comes to the king and he says, Shalom. Hi, how are you? He bows down. He says, good news. Baruch Hashem, asher sagar es anoshim asher nasu es yadam ba'adoni ha-melech. Those that had put their hand against my master, the king, they have been delivered into our hands. So that was the news that he said. That was the good. Now, even originally, he intended to tell the king the bad news also. So usually, this is what they say. If you have two sets of news, you always give the good news first. You know, so he said, Baruch Hashem, we got them. So, V'yomar Shalom and Nar Lo Shalom. So then the king asked about, how's my boy doing? How's my boy Chikol? How's my son Avshalom? V'yomar Achimas. So I think... I don't know if I mentioned this, but he keeps calling him a nar. He's young, you know, don't blame him. So, like, even when his son rebels against him, he says he's young, he's foolish. He'll grow up, he'll grow out of it. One day he'll be fine, right? He still sees him as a nar. He's just young. He's just, is he okay? Did he survive the battle? Now, Achimotz over here picks up. Originally, he wanted to tell the news, but the way the king asked, he realized that he didn't want to be the one to break the news to the king. He says, well, there were a lot of people around. Yoav was there, but I can't tell you, I don't know exactly what happened. 30. So the king says, all right, just wait, I'll find out. And he's standing there. And along comes the Cushi. Again, we don't know why he was called Cushi. He could have been from Ethiopia. That might be one. You know, he could have been an African. It's strange that you'd have an African in the army. We do get a sense that it was the United Nations there. Like, in general, like, we keep mentioning these different tribes and different peoples. So it could be that it was the United Nations. There's one view that all of these various people were Jews who took the name of the country they were in. It was a common Jewish custom to name people after the place where they were from. So many of our last names are from countries that people came from in Europe, or the they have Rabbi the Netziv, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, because his original ancestors were from Berlin. Or the Chacham Tzvi, his last name was Ashkenazi because he came from Germany. But it's very, very common that people were just named. I think my name, I don't really know from my ancestors, Stein, but I think there was a city called Stein or something that was in a lot of the people from that area took that name. But it was relatively common for people to be known by the country they were from. That was just how they were called. Trying to remember that just a number of famous people were just named. They were their first name, and then they got the name of the city they were from. So and so from, whatever city they happened to be from. Yeah. So it could be this Cush was just a dark fellow from. He looked like maybe he traveled through Cush or his parents lived there, but we don't know. It's just interesting that one of the rules of the army was that they didn't have foreign mercenaries. That was not a Jewish thing, to hire foreigners to come serve in the army. And so typically speaking, if you were in the army, you would assume, especially if you were fighting against idolatry and other things, that you were part of the... again, I don't know. If you want to say that it was a foreigner, say it's a foreigner. It just sounds funny to...
Wasn't Moshe's wife, didn't they call her a Cushi?
Yes, yes.
So, I mean, there could have been a line that came down and they were still called that.
And it could be. Yeah, that's right. It could be that. Rashi, there's some people learn that she was from Africa. Other people learn... And, Midian was one of the Middle Eastern countries that was the... But other people learned that Cushi was an expression of how beautiful she was. Black is beautiful, everybody knows that. But Rashi actually says they called her black because they didn't want to give her an Ein Hara, because she was so beautiful that they just called her that. But it was like a nickname.
How then do people know that they are, if they are Cohen or not? I mean, Stein, for example, is a name that's associated with Cohen.
No, people really don't know whether they're Cohen or Levi from their last name. Even though there are a lot of names, like Siegel is typically a Levi. They have that name, Siegel. And Katz is typically a Cohen.
Yeah.
But not 100%. It's a good guess, but it's never a... my name actually was... I got it from my grandmother. That was Stein was her name. And my grandfather had a different name, and he changed his name when he came to the country. He took her name. So everybody has a story. So.
You don't actually know whether you are from a Cohen family.
Oh, I do, because my father's a Cohen and my grandfather. But I'm just saying
that's what my father told me, so that I have to assume that that's the case.
If they were in a position to know. Today, sometimes people are just, if somebody attends shul every week, then they know what a Kohen is. Somebody that attended shul once a year, sometimes they'd get confused. Kohen, Levi, important person, like they would get. So, as long as the one who knows it's a Kohen is knows for a fact, and, it's not that they remember. They were once in their shul for their bar mitzvah a long time ago, and they got the first aliyah. And today, what happens, it's very interesting, is that sometimes people become observant, which, Baruch Hashem is relatively common, and sometimes a person thinks he's a Kohen, and then he's married to a woman who a Kohen is not allowed to marry. So it could be the one was divorced once, or whatever was the story, or a convert. And so then the problem is he doesn't want to be. We have someone like that in this community who I will not tell you what his name is. And so he wanted to get rid of his kahuna, but you can't get rid of it once you're a Kohen. You can't resign from the Kohen Society. But yeah. But what you could do is you can investigate how official was the person notified that they were a Kohen. And he researched it a little bit, and they sometimes go back to the cemeteries to see if on the headstone of the Kohen, they usually have the priestly blessing, and there was enough suspicion that they allowed him to keep his wife, because in order to force him to say you're not allowed to stay married to that, you'd have to know for sure if he was a Kohen.
Try the DNA.
The DNA isn't 100%. They have found the Kohen gene, the Levi gene, and it's like 75% accurate, which is...
At what percent?
I think 75%.
75%.
Which is pretty good considering it's 4,000 years, and, that's a... but there has been some confusion over time about that, but, that's the...
How do we get into
Kohen? Oh, so we just asked about last names, and I was saying last names are really where people are from, but that's it. So, I'm just saying that the word Cushi, so it doesn't automatically mean black or Ethiopian. It's just, it could be that it was a person who was from that area. Or it could be like Moshe's wife, that there's a view that that was a nickname that was commonly used, the Cushi.
Can I ask something about this? Mm-hmm. And I may have asked this last week, but I don't remember the answer if I did. But I still don't understand why they killed Absalom after...
Correct. That's right. Yes. So there's a few. Some people want to assume that Yoav was bloody. Yoav was the chief general, and that was his. He made his own decision to go against the will of David. They suggest that possibility that he just did that on his own. Because not bloody in a sense that he was a fighter and a warrior, and he felt Absalom deserved it, and he on his own initiative killed him. The problem with that view is that later on David has a list of things that he's angry with Yoav about, and he doesn't list this. So this implies, and it wasn't a secret that people knew Yoav, he had his 10 armor bearers. There's no secrets, if that's true, so then why wasn't David upset with Yoav? Not only that, Yoav is going to yell at David about mourning too much for his son. So if Yoav was responsible for killing him, it'd be very hard for him to be the one to yell at David about mourning too much. So the most common answer is that Yoav's job was to protect the soldiers as much as possible. And he made a military decision that if Avshalom would remain alive, then his troops would be in danger, because then the war would have continued. And so he made a decision in order to save more lives. If you'll notice, right after the decision to kill Avshalom, he tells his soldiers to call off the battle, because there's no more reason to fight. And the juxtaposition is that he was looking out. We have a rule that if somebody's coming to kill you, you're allowed to kill them first, and you don't have to ask questions. You don't have to read them the Miranda rights. You don't have to. Someone's out to threaten a person in a way that the Torah says this. If they're digging a tunnel to go into your house at a time when you would be there, which means that potentially they're coming to physically harm somebody, you're allowed to go and kill them. Not only you're allowed to, you're supposed to kill them first rather than let yourself be killed. So they say that Yoav made a military decision that if he wouldn't kill Avshalom, there'd be more bloodshed and there was a danger.
And he was caught in the trees. I mean, they could have captured him.
But then the other side would have fought to try to free him, or the war would have continued. So he felt the killing of Avshalom was important to stop the rebellion and to save lives.
Avshalom may have had a change of heart if they had saved him.
It's possible, but he didn't.
There's a million ifs.
Yes, we don't really know. That's one of the reasons Tanakh is interesting to learn, is that we have room to guess. Because, in other words, if we don't know, it's possible if we come up with a reasonable theory, we only know a few of the details. Mm-hmm. But one of the details we know is that David never publicly chastised Yoav for killing him. Mm-hmm. So again, most of the commentaries assume Yoav did it as a defense measure. He felt that there are other people who say that he wanted Avshalom to have an atonement. We will see that Avshalom had done terrible sins, and almost like he felt that after like he had his 10 men, he put those 3 arrows in him because we mentioned that he had stolen 3 hearts. And he was killed by 10 people because he had violated his father's 10 wives. And so he, in a way, was judging him. He was giving him a judgment of... we typically, we leave judgment up to God because we're very far from that. But biblical figures, it was relatively common that they could decide somebody gets what they deserve or, gets divine punishment. And the hope was that if Avshalom would be punished for his sins down here, then maybe there was a chance at least that he wouldn't have to burn for eternity. And we're going to see most of the commentators learn that when David was crying for Avshalom, he wasn't just crying for nothing. He was actually praying that God should not make him burn so much. We'll get there in a second. But there's an idea that certain people that are very bad sinners, they go through a treatment in HELL before, that the purgatory. They go through purgatory. And so David was doing his best. He felt that his son had done this and had been killed, but that he would face a very harsh punishment. And so he was praying that Hashem take him out of purgatory. And typically it works the other way around. The son says Kaddish to make sure that if the father has any judgment that he's getting merit for the... But over here, David took it upon himself to try to save his son. It's an interesting concept. Can you save somebody from burning? In other words, if somebody did bad things when they were alive, but they were, your person is so grateful to them for the good things they did for you, can you do good deeds and pray to help that person in the world to come? Can you help? And so there is an idea that it could help, that and people say that, so there could be, there are other things going on over here, basically is what I'm trying to say. So verse 31. So what did the Cushi say, whoever he is? My translation just says Cushite. It doesn't say black. It doesn't say Ethiopian. It doesn't say, because again, we don't know if it was a nickname, if he was from Cush. But he says, he says, some people say the Cushi was disrespectful because he says, he told him what happened to Avshalom, and he said, so first he says that those people that came against you were all killed. Whatever happened to him should happen to all of your enemies. And so he, in a way, like the king was saying, that my son was a good man, he was a young lad, and the Cushi is answering the king, no, he's like all your enemies. He's like all the terrible people. There's one view that the king got very mad at the Cushi over here, but we don't really have it in writing, so I won't, you know, this doesn't say what happened, but it does say, chapter 19, verse 1, Yigas HaMelech, king got very upset. Vayal Ali Yasashari went up to the attic. Kings didn't show emotions publicly. It was considered like the king wouldn't cry in front of his people. If you remember, David HaMelech got yelled at by his wife for dancing in front of the people. You know, it's not kingly. You're not acting royals aren't supposed to express emotion in front of commoners or whatever. It's not so he went up to his he went up to the attic to cry, have a good cry. He's crying away. Omar, he says, Belechta Bini Avshalom, Bini Avshalom. Mi Tain Musi Anita. He says, I wish I would have died instead of you, Avshalom. Bini Bini. My son, my son. And it's a, again, it's a father weeping.
That's actually where Faulkner got the title of his famous novel, Absalom, Absalom.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it may have been a movie, too.
So the Medrash says that he said, my son, seven times to pull him up from the seven levels of Gehenna. Eight times altogether. Because there was eight levels of purgatory, and he wanted to pull him out of purgatory. He was praying that, you know, that when he says that he deserved to die instead of his son, he was saying that he felt he was at fault. And if he had done more, maybe his son wouldn't have turned out that way. And he was davening, and there's a dispute whether it helped or not, whether he does Avshalom go down as the all-time wicked, or maybe he wasn't so bad. Verse 2, Vayagid Yoav. So they told Yoav what's going on, that the king just can't be comforted. Hinei HaMelech Bocha, the king is crying, V'Yisavel, and he's mourning on Avshalom. Vati Teshua V'Yomahu La'Evil. Now, usually when you win a war, everybody's happy. This was a flip-flop. The war, the winning of the war, turned into mourning. Kishamea Amba Yomulema Netzav HaMelech Beno. The king is depressed about his son. The king is saddened over the loss of his son. Everybody thought he'd be so happy, and now he's very upset. Verse 4, Viganav Amba Yomahu Lovely. Very interesting expression. In Hebrew, it's a very cute expression. It says the people stole away. Meaning, like, a robber works, when a person steals, he does it in a way that nobody notices. He's like a pickpocket, or he conveniently, like, shoplifts, he puts it in his pocket. So the people coming back from the war, when they heard that the king was upset, they didn't want to parade by the king with their weapons, you know, to show how many people they killed the way the military usually parades. They, like, stole away. They, like, you know, walked very quietly to the barracks. That's the Hebrew in verse 4. Vizganav Yomahu Lavu Ir. The people, he says sneaked, but in Hebrew the word Vizganav means they snuck in, they did it in stealth, like a robber. Like they were ashamed. They were like, usually they have the parade. Here they're ashamed. And Melech lod his panav. And the king, he covered his face. He said, Melech called God, and he cries out, Bini Avshalom, Avshalom, Bini, Bini, my son, my son. So he's really not taking it well. V'yavo Yoav Evo Melech. And Yoav goes to the king, Habayis, in the house. V'yomer, Havasta. Now, Yoav here is very strong. It's amazing how strong Yoav speaks over here to the king. Listen to what he says. I'm in verse 5, going into 6. 6. V'yomer Yoav amah habayis. V'yomer havashta yom espenei kol avdecha. The king said, these people just risked their lives for you. The people that battled on David's side were going against big odds, and if they were caught, they would have been killed. And they risked their lives in battle, and they put everything they could into saving your life. And they also, what about your other sons and your other daughters? Sometimes people mourn their loss, so much so that the rest of their family that they love dearly loses out. In other words, somebody is, we don't really control our fate, and we don't really know, everybody has tragedies in their life. And sometimes they mourn that tragedy so much that they have other people who they love who they end up hurting because they're not themselves. So Yoav is saying over here, what about all your other sons and daughters? They can't have a father who's going to live the rest of his life in mourning and crying and what about your wives? And you have lots of wives and lots of, life can't end over here.
That was more than just hurting them, that was killing them.
Yes, yes, right, right. Verse 7, Avesana, and you're loving your those that... Now, also, the point here is, you are loving your son who hated you. Ulisone yasevecha, and you're hating those that love you. Ki gada yom ki ein lecha sarma vadim. It's as if you don't have servants, you don't appreciate him. Ki yadata yom ki lo avshalom chai. You're telling everybody that you wish Avshalom was alive, and kulanu and that we had all died. Would you then be happy if we lost the battle? Like he was saying that there's got to be a context here. And verse 8, he continues on with this very strong speech. Va'ata, he says, now, kum, get up, say v'dibar alei v'avdecha. He says, you better get up, and you better encourage your soldiers. Ki v'hashem nishbati. Yoav, who was loyal, fiercely loyal to David, who always risked his life for David, he swore by Hashem, ki ein k'yotzi im yolan ish yitach halayla. He says that all of your men will leave you tonight. That after all of these people that risked their lives and that went into exile with you, they are not going to stay with you anymore. If you don't appreciate them, and if you're saying that you wish that you had been killed, and instead Avshalom was the king, for ra'lachazos mikola rasha voilacha, and this will be worse to you than all of the evil that ever befell you. Minerecharata. And David HaMelech had a lot of bad days. He's saying that if we abandon you, if you turn the people away from you today, that's it. You can't you have to put on a face, so to speak. You have to show them you appreciate what they did. You can't say you wish that they had lost the battle and that your son had been victorious. You can't say that to the soldiers because they won't stay with you if you say that. The king got up. So the king gave them an audience, and the people walked by the king. And Yoav talked him into, he gave him an understanding what the soldiers must be feeling and how to maintain the loyalty of the people. Or at least that you have to be pragmatic a little bit. You can't give up your life in mourning. And so he talked him into like greeting the troops. When the troops come back, you have to greet them. You have to be there. Even today, you know, like when the president goes to the troops, it means a lot to the commander-in-chief. They need to see that they're fighting for someone. They need to have that kind of... So Yoav said this to him. Now, what happened to the enemy, meanwhile? What happened to the... Yisrael Nasi, everybody went home. All the regular Jews who were there, they went home. So that's kind of the end of what happened at that particular battle. Again, if Yoav had really done something wrong in killing Avshalom, it would be strange that he talked so harshly to David. Like, you know, but he felt strongly that they were all acting to save the king's life and that the king had to show them appreciation. Otherwise...
Hmm.
What?
David knew that Yoav was responsible for
I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, David knew Yoav very well, too.
He never really says that it was his decision to kill him.
We don't know.
Well, yeah, it's the part we don't see that...
Right, makes it interesting. But we'll see later when David knew these were his cousins. He knew them. This was his sister's, his nephew. He knew his nephew very well.
Yoav was Zeruiah.
Ben Tzruya, yeah. Now, we are going to see that afterwards, David, kind of in a way, demotes Yoav. Maybe he was mad at him. But it could be he was mad at this speech. Yoav here is acting like, it's not easy to boss the king around. It could be he could have been a little more respectful how he said it, or but the king accepted what he said was true. The only question was how you say it. You know, pull yourself together. Do it for the sake of the kids. Do it for the sake of the nation. The nation needs the king to hold himself together, basically, is what...
There's a big assumption that what Yoav is saying to David is true. I mean, mm-hmm. It doesn't necessarily mean that the people would have betrayed David.
No. David accepted it. David agreed with him. He agreed to...
I think David was just pulled out of his...
David wasn't a pussycat, though. I mean, he was strong, you know. He was, but apparently he agreed. But it's true. It is true. It may be that Yoav was exaggerating. I don't know why he would have. But again, Yoav was seeing it from the soldiers' point of view that they just risked their lives, and now the king is saying he wishes that they lost. I mean, that would be so awful, like to fight a war for the king, and then the king says, "Well, I wish the other side had won." You know, just the morale would be terrible. But meanwhile, we go on to the next, we go back and forth between the individual and the nation. So what's happening with the Jewish people? Verse 10. V'yikol ha'am na'adam mekol shivti Yisrael. The people now, all of a sudden they woke up, you know, when Avshalom was around, they thought he was a pretty cool, people are fickle like that. They have a leader, they follow the leader. All of a sudden the leader's out of the picture, and then they, there's a certain moment of clarity. Now that Avshalom was out of the picture, so, all of a sudden, they're wondering, you know what? Why did we support Avshalom to rebel against his father? His father was the one that was had saved us all this time. David was our king. He saved us from all our enemies. Didn't say he was a nice guy. They said he was, you know, and he saved us from the plishtim. And the king had to run from the land from Avshalom. It's interesting, they still saw David as the king. They felt perhaps that Hashem was punishing David for his sins. They felt that maybe they needed new leadership. The people really didn't want to kill David. And now they're saying, you know, he's our king. He's the one that saved us. We really need to get him back. Verse 11, Avshalom Asher Meshachnu Leinu, and Avshalom that we anointed. Now, when you anoint somebody, that's you made him the Mashiach. Like, you know, Avshalom was going to save everybody. He's dead in war. It's interesting, it doesn't say who killed him, but he died in war. Bata lama atam nachrishim. He said, why are we quiet? What's the hesitation? I think the whole country was in shock. Like, this was why should we be quiet? Let's bring the king back. Let's bring him back, the king, to where he belongs. Verse 12. So how about the king? What was the king doing? Why didn't he come back? You know, so he understood, David, that this was a delicate thing, that in order to rule the people, if you remember, that even initially, when he took over from the descendant of Shaul, he waited until the people wanted him to rule. If you're going to be a king, the people have to agree to it. It's not the Jewish way to force yourself on top of somebody else. And so David here also, he could have marched in, he had the only army, but he that's not how we rule with the will of the people. So V'yamelech David shalach al tzadok, so he sent it tzadok av yasar kohanim leimor. So he said, you know what? He thought the people would really be loyal. He said, Dabra ozikne Yehuda leimor. Go have a talk with the sages of Yehuda, say, Tiyu achronim. It's very interesting also, the philosophy of this. He said, you don't want to be the last one to bring back the king, do you? You know, you don't want to be left out. You know, if you say it that way. He said, Lama tiyu achronim lahashiv ala melech habeso. Why should you, my family, you know, David was from Yehuda, why should you be the last one to bring me back? Udavar ko Yisrael boi melech habeso. Everybody's talking about it. Verse 13, Achayata matmi besoriyatim. You're my flesh and blood. Lama tiyu achronim, why don't you bring me back? So David wanted that the people should invite him to come back. Now, there's a little bit of discussion why he asked Yehuda, even though that was his tribe, but there's always this fear that he would prefer his tribe over the other tribe. There's always a little bit of play whether the king represents Yehuda more than the other tribes. What are you going to do, meanwhile, about the head of the army that was ruling the government for Avshalom? And he was David's other nephew. And his name was Amasa. So what message are you going to have for him? And the problem here is that anybody that rebels against a king is usually killed as a traitor, and the Torah even allows that. So what could all of the people right now who are running the army, what would they expect from David? So David has a message. He says, "L'Amasa tomer elo atzmi soriata." He said, you're my flesh and blood. Of course I'm not going to kill you. Yosef. And not only am I not going to kill you, I'm going to make Imosar Saval Tielafane. I'm going to bring you into the government. I'm going to make you my new chief army. You're going to take over for Yoav. So it's really interesting what David is doing over here. So was he mad at Yoav? Maybe, you know, or did he just feel that for the sake of peace, he needed to bring somebody in from the other side? But that's what he does. He offers him. Verse 15. And he presented this well because, you know, try to get all the Jews to agree on something, but it worked. It says that they came like one man. He said, come back. Verse 16. The people came out to bring the Yisrael. They came with an escort. So Now David HaMelech is on the way home, and so he planned this all right. He figured it out, but we're going to have a lot of things to deal with. We're going to see if Yoav is very happy about losing his. You know, this is how you reward Yoav for winning the war, right? And then we're going to have to see what happened to some of those people who had been involved in kicking out David to begin with. And so there are a number of issues that we'll see as David HaMelech comes back to the throne. But certainly, it was a good thing. In other words, the fact that now he was coming back to lead the people.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.